Mirko Petriu is a Vancouver author of two spy thrillers set in Ukraine, Yaroslav's Treasure and Yaroslav's Revenge. And he's done a lot of research on Ukrainian history to get those stories out. He's also been researching what's going on right now in the present. And you've asked the question that people aren't asking a lot, and that is, why all of a sudden all this attention on Ukraine?
Two and two together and managed to get four. I was asking myself, how come this is happening now and not, say, a couple of years ago?
There have been protests in the streets before, since 2004.
Yeah, since 2004. There was a protest by a small businessman over changes to the tax code. And, you know, it was a wonderful protest, but it really didn't turn into anything revolutionary. Nothing like what is happening right now. And, you know, the other interesting thing that's happening right now is Western Europe's attention on Ukraine. Over the last several years, and in fact, under Yushchev, while Ukraine was under Yushchenko, Western Europe was more than glad to ignore Ukraine.
Yes.
They could have signed an association agreement with Western Europe, years ago. But in actual fact, Merkel was not very interested in Ukraine. Suddenly she is. I mean, in the last few weeks, she's proven to be our biggest fan, and that's quite surprising. Until you realize some of the other developments in Ukraine.
Right.
And the major development, of course, is shale gas. It turns out that Western Ukraine, namely Halychyna, in a huge swath starting from the town of Zhokva, going past the eastern borders of the city of Lviv and on to Khmelnytsk, has a huge swath of potential shale gas, and Chevron has been contracted to develop that. There's actually a second swath of shale gas, and it goes roughly from Kharkiv to Donetsk, and it's Shell that's going to be working that area, those fields.
Who are these agreements made with?
Well, it's actually between the Ukrainian government and Chevron in the case of Halychyna and Shell in the case of the Kharkiv area. So we've got two Western companies with some experience in fracking. And in the case of Halychyna, they're talking about over 1,000 wells. And that will take several years, mind you, but as soon as 5 years from now, Ukraine could be self-sufficient in natural gas. It takes Gazprom right out of the picture.
Now, this is not a surprise, obviously, then, to Yanukovych. He knows all about these agreements with Shell and Chevron.
Exactly. But, it suddenly makes Ukraine interesting to Europe because, projected a few more years into the future, Ukraine could actually be supplying natural gas rather than buying natural gas. So that becomes much more interesting to Germany and Mrs. Merkel, of course. So suddenly there's competition for Ukraine as opposed to an ignorance of Ukraine. In the meantime, under Yanukovych's wonderful leadership, the Ukrainian government has run out of money. They are, for all intents and purposes, flat broke. So they were dealing with some promises from the IMF starting this summer. And tied to that would then be the association agreement with the European Union. One of the things that happened is the IMF set some pretty difficult requirements. The probably the most difficult was to raise the price of natural gas to the public. Most people don't know, but there's actually a two-price system in Ukraine.
Hmm.
One is to the general public, and the other is to businesses and factories.
Hmm.
The general public gets a discount. Theoretically, they're using Ukrainian natural gas, which is inexpensive as opposed to Russian natural gas, which is at $450. And of course, a two-pipe system like that is wonderful because, as anybody in business knows, it opens the door to all kinds of machinations, and somebody is also making a profit. So those mm-hmm. that are making a profit on natural gas, they're playing that particular game. They're buying it as a consumer and selling it to factories and so on. But anyways, that's an aside. Oh yeah, the IMF requirement was that the consumer's price be raised. Now, just before the winter time, that's a difficult sell for any government, so that wasn't going to happen. That requirement was actually published or made October 31st by the IMF, which basically shut off any possibility of a loan at that time. And it's right after that you've got Yanukovych running around looking for money, or talking to Putin looking for money. And as some of us know, they met for 5 hours in Sochi back on, what was it, 27th? Actually, it was late October, October 27th. Then the 9th of November at the Moscow airport, they met for secret talks and probably some more since then. The most recent one apparently is being interpreted as Russia offering Ukraine $15 billion loan. And a major discount in the price of natural gas from $450 to $200, which, strangely enough, is exactly the price that Yushchenko was bargaining for back in 2009. But that's a separate story. Yushchenko knew what a proper price for the natural gas was. And but anyways, apparently there's a commitment by Yanukovych to go with the Russian customs union and get all these side benefits, namely the price on natural gas and so on at the moment. Okay, now one of the potential reasons why the IMF suddenly set some pretty high barriers is that Russia was involved with the U.S. and a few other countries in negotiating with Iran. And they were negotiating, as we all remember, to stop Iran from developing their uranium enrichment program. And that was announced, surprisingly enough, I believe November 24th, right? And there's a suspicion, there was a linkage between Russia's help in negotiating with Iran, a linkage between that and the IMF loan or the absence of the IMF loan. So that seems to be the background. Now, the Euromaidan revolution going on right now, I think, upsets the apple cart totally. And, again, plays into the hand of Western Europe. Definitely is very worrisome to Putin because it's not only... his plan is now not only destroyed, but it's Ukraine is setting a wonderful example for the Russian citizens who may want to emulate it. So there's at least two reasons why Putin is not very happy right now. So how's that?
Wow, that's amazing. So there are a whole bunch of things going on here as well. I mean, you've got Russia is in the spotlight because the Olympics are going to be there in a few months' time. So they can't be having this kind of nonsense happening on their, on their doorstep in Ukraine.
Well, the one thing they can't do is they can't blatantly have their troops cross any borders and get involved in any warfare in Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
As has been a threat. I mean, they can't do it until after the Sochi Olympics.
Right.
Although there's plenty of rumors of Russian involvement in terms of police and what have you, even now. Now, the last time we talked about InfoWars. So,
right.
Anything you hear or read, you have to take with a large grain of salt. Since the last time we talked, there was another major police crackdown, and again, early in the morning, we're talking about 2 in the morning on the 11th, so we're talking December 11th. The police attack several positions, and again, they do it at night because there's fewer demonstrators at night.
Mm-hmm.
There's simply not enough tents, and I think we touched on that last
mm-hmm.
time we talked.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's a weakness. There was about 1,000 people out, and round numbers, there was about 1,000 Berkut policemen that moved in. And you know, there was a definite shoving match involved. They tried to clear the demonstrators from the Kyiv City Hall, and failed. And basically, what we saw was a fine example of medieval siege warfare.
Hmm.
You had the black suited, black helmeted troops assaulting the walls of the. Of the city hall, and the defenders were pouring water on them from up above. Well, it was minus 10 outside. Water at minus 10 makes for a pretty good weapon. Very, very discouraging. So very quickly, the Berkut backed away from the walls of city hall, and that assault failed. So, no, they didn't use boiling oil or anything.
Just water.
But water at minus 10 is quite an effective discouragement from
wow.
from any further activity. So you know that was one incident, and the other one was a major battle, if you wish. I mean, everything short of firearms, of course. But a major battle on Institutska Street, where you know the protesters had set up barricades, and the police tore them down. And, you know, since then, or the next day, the protesters moved right back in, rebuilt the barricades, reinforced them with a combination of steel rods, snow, and ice. So snow and ice actually becomes a building material in this
mm-hmm,
kind of weather.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the barricades are back up, and nothing along that line has happened since the 11th.
Well, you know,
in the meantime, there was two attempts at roundtables with Yanukovych. The first one was the three previous Ukrainian presidents talking to Yanukovych. It sure, you know, the film shows that Yanukovych thought that the police assault was all a good joke. He didn't. He was giggling like a schoolgirl over the whole fight.
All people
going
getting
on.
Their heads bashed in. Peaceful.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
That's
that,
funny.
That was
That's
quite funny to Yanukovych. And the three
okay.
previous presidents left that meeting saying, you know, there's nothing to negotiate.
It's hopeless.
You know, they're saying, you know, there's no point having a roundtable. There's really nothing to negotiate with Yanukovych. He's you know, he hasn't, you know, never mind the 11th, but going back to the November 30th attack, he hasn't charged any police, any or for that matter, the Minister of Internal Affairs, who is directly responsible for the police, and is the only person that could have given the order. There's absolutely no talk of charging these people for what happened. And we're talking about 109 people hospitalized as a result of that. So,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't a minor scuffle by any means.
So we've got definitely two cold wars going on here, one on the streets
mm-hmm.
of Ukraine,
the
barricades
yeah.
and the ice, and then, of course, the tug of war that Ukraine is still in and has been, what, for centuries between the East and West want their resources.
Very
it
much so.
Used to be the black soil and whatever else, and now it's oil. And that's why the media is interested now, because this is a fight really about oil, but nobody's saying it.
Seems to be, well, not so much oil, but natural gas, which is,
well,
which is even more valuable, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, wow. Well, you know, that's, I guess, this is going to be playing out for a long time. We've got Sochi coming up in a few months. And as you say, they're going to have to restrain themselves. We can hope that that's going to buy Ukraine time. And in the meantime, they can, you know, resolve their issues and get back on track. And, get off the streets and back into their homes. So, well, thank you so much, Miroko, for sharing this new insight. And please do keep us posted with more.
Oh, there will be war. There's no doubt about
that.
You don't
hear this on the mainstream media if you turn on your TV or your radio, unless you're listening to Nash Holos or you're watching the live stream from Ukraine. You're not going to hear this on ABC or NBC or CBC even.
And that's something that we in Canada have to work on. This has got to become a mainstream story. It's got to be on daily. It's not quite making it there yet.
Maybe in time, maybe someday. But for now, thanks so much for coming on Nash Holos, and people tuning in can get a little bit more insight than what is offered out there. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.